DeSanto Propane is four generations strong as a trustworthy family-owned business with unmatched customer service. Go online at desantopropane.com for more info or call toll-free at 1-800-752-4574. Since 1937, the difference has been DeSanto Propane. Today we are talking electric school buses. New York State has set ambitious goals for transitioning school buses from gas to electric as part of its climate initiatives. By 2027, all new school buses sold in the state must be zero emission. What's more, by 2035, every school bus on the road is expected to be zero emission as well. Bill Harvey is a transportation advisor for Leonard Bus Sales and is here to talk with us about the nuance and the implications of this evolving market. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time today. When you're talking to someone who knows absolutely nothing about electric buses versus diesel powered, what's the first thing you tell them so that they understand what's going on?
Well, I mean, the first and foremost is that you have a new piece of the puzzle that you don't have with a diesel or an internal combustion engine, whether it's propane, gasoline, any of the other fuel choices that are out there currently. Is that now you have to worry about the big word of infrastructure. And that is truly the tripping point, the challenge for every school district, municipality. There's multiple parties involved. It's very complicated. So the bus is actually, we're finding the easiest part of the entire discussion. And it is, what is your current standing with your infrastructure on site? You know, what sort of power do you have? What sort of power do you have access to? And what's it going to take to upgrade that? And that seems like a simple conversation to have, but it is very difficult because there's so many stakeholders involved in that, whether it be with a district or a municipality or even a private contractor.
When you're talking to different stakeholders, that are involved in all of that, how close or how far away is the average district when they're beginning to consider adding some electric buses to their fleet?
There's quite a gap. The reality in almost every situation that I've physically touched, which across, you know, I work for Leonard Bus Sales. I cover the Rochester Finger Lakes region all the way down to the Pennsylvania border. And I've engaged with most of the customers. So let's just say it's 25 or 30 districts that I'm intimately aware of their bus garage, their facility, their operation. Most can handle one or two level two chargers on their existing service. And beyond that, they're going to have to add a completely new service to the building or put another transformer in, a step-up transformer, they call it, to go from 208 or 240 service up to 480 in order to do level three charging, which would be like referred to as DC fast charging. Mm-hmm. So we're calling it the brick wall, is that every district's got a brick wall. Some might be different than others, but it really seems like most districts can handle one or two. Maybe that's four or five, depending on the size of the fleet and this, you know, how new their building is. Yeah. But like I'll use Naples Central Schools as an example. They have a brand new bus garage that was built and opened in 2018, and they have a 208 service, which most commercial bus garages have. Is a 208, a 208 volt service coming into the building. And they only have the capacity for three level two chargers on their existing service that supplies their, you know, their panels inside their building. So for them, they're going to hit that brick wall after they get one more vehicle beyond the two that they have on order now. And they're going to have to do a service upgrade with the utility to bring more power and to be able to support even just one more bus beyond the first three. So that's just kind of a little bit of a realistic situation there that we're seeing in the field.
So that's some great context leading into this next question I had, which is the timeline. So we've seen the state say that by 2027, all new buses sold in the state have to be zero emission. And then all buses on the road by 2035 need to be zero emission. When you think about the quote unquote brick wall that you just outlined and that kind of timeline, how realistic does it seem that districts will be able to make the adjustments they need to make? I mean, what does an average fleet look like in Naples, for example?
Yeah. So it's going to be very difficult to meet that mandate, to start purchasing 100% zero emission starting in 2027. It's going to be very difficult for just about every single district that I've engaged with, that we've talked to in the industry, school districts, and it's really starting to grow within the administrations of districts, that they're really starting to realize the scope and the scale of what this mandate is and how complex it is to make something happen. Timeline wise, if, you know, let's just take Naples, for example, if they're going to need an additional service brought in, it can take anywhere from 12 to 24 months to bring a new service in, a new transformer. Right now, if anybody's following, you know, the challenges of getting equipment for electrical grid, so whether it be transformers, switch panels, things of that nature, you know, it's taking, some of these components are on back order for 2 years. So just at that point right there, it's a real challenge, and it's causing a lot of panic and chaos within school districts, quite frankly. And it's tough to see, because at the end of the day, and I'm passionate about this, I schools are there to educate our kids and give them a safe place to learn every day, and a place to get, you know, for many kids, they need to go to school to get food and shelter. Like, schools do a lot for our kids and our communities. And to see all of them, all the way up to superintendents and business officials, trying to crunch the numbers to figure out something that's never been done before without very many answers from the industry, both ourselves as a dealership, you know, we can learn every day, but it's the actual utilities, the RG&E, NYSEG, National Grid, they're learning just as fast as we are. I mean, this is a totally new landscape, and there's so much that we're trying to do in such a short period of time. And, you know, I'm kind of going on here, but the important way to look at this, for people that don't know the way that school districts operate their budgets, you know, you go on a fiscal year, which is July 1 to June 30. And right now, in the budget preparation for the 24-25 school year, school districts are working on that right now, building their budgets, figuring out their costs, and looking to place orders for vehicles and equipment and other things that they'll want to take delivery of in the summer of 24 and into 25. School districts have three budget years, including the one that we're working on right now, before they cannot buy internal combustion engines anymore, the way that the legislation is written here in New York with the mandate. So districts are really, there's not a lot of time, and it's taking about a year. If you get funding, it's taking about a year or a little more, depending on the flow of the whole process, to actually apply for funding, get it, purchase your vehicle, deliver it. It's taking all of 12 months, if not 24, on the long end. So it's not a very quick process. Whereas to buy a diesel or gasoline bus, propane, you know, you're looking at, you know, right now the industry is backed up, but just like automotive is, where it's taking time to get things, but in normal years, you could order a vehicle and get it delivered 6 months later. And the industry as a whole is so far from that right now, both with internal combustion and with electric. So,
yeah. And I'm reminded of a conversation we had with RG&E a couple months ago on this very show about the implementation of that infrastructure in rural communities across the Finger Lakes and Central New York and even Western New York. They can handle, basically their argument was, we can handle the sort of adoption rate that we've seen over the last 5 years. But when you start to add in heavier users in specific areas, that's when it gets a little more challenging for them to be able to get the infrastructure into those quote unquote hotspots. And it seems like what we'd be doing here is beginning in 2027, starting to create a bunch of hotspots all over upstate New York.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And bigger picture, what concerns me as, you know, like, so I've been in the school bus industry, you know, grew up around it. I've been in it now for more than 15 years, and, you know, school buses are what I know, but this whole evolution of zero emission vehicles and electric has really drawn my interest to the bigger picture of energy and how energy, electricity in particular, how it works and how it gets delivered. And it's very confusing to me how the state feels that they can mandate this, and at the same time, they want to do away with all fossil fuel energy generation, be it natural gas or even get rid of nuclear. Like, where is all of our power going to come from, and how are you going to transmit it? Or, you know, the transmission side of it is a question too. So it's just, we're trying to do so much in such a short period of time, and it's, you know, we're going to see progress. Progress is going to happen, and that's good. But the timelines are really, like, they're very challenging, and it's become apparent that it's a very political stance, not necessarily something that's based in reason or logic. It's based in politic. And, you know, as somebody who's on the ground working with schools and sitting across from board members and superintendents, business officials, transportation people that are just simply trying to figure out who's going to drive the bus today. It's very difficult to sit there and watch these folks who are just like you and me trying to do a job, a very important job. And they're in a tough spot. Cause what do? You know, they can't ignore this, but they also have a hard time trying to figure out how it's all going to work. So.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the buses themselves. What is the biggest difference between an electric bus and a diesel powered, combustion engine, school bus?
So industry wide right now, the biggest difference is simply just your range, in the physical operation of the vehicle. The bus itself, the way it looks, the way it drives, you know, physically drives the steering components. Most people, unless you were listening for the audible noise of it driving by, you wouldn't know it's any different than a bus you see driving down your streets every day today. So the industry has done a pretty good job of almost not skipping a beat and keeping things pretty consistent, which is making it easier for the maintenance side of things and for districts to transition to this, because they don't need to change too much about what they do other than looking at their routing and how they can handle the range portion of it, which is quite a difference. I mean, you're looking at a full-size school bus, you know, what everybody typically would reference as a full-size bus driving on the road in your community. You know, those vehicles with a diesel fuel tank that's 65 gallons or even 100 could do, you know, they could do 300, 400, 500 miles without having to fill up on fuel. Whereas an electric vehicle, you're going to be fueling that vehicle once, if not twice a day, with a total range of, you know, 80 to 100 miles, which is, that's a big change in the way that fleets will operate, if that makes sense.
Would that not require more buses in most situations, in most districts?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the discussion points, is that that's the first place you go in your mind is, well, maybe we would need one bus or two buses to do what one bus does today. But the reality is that most districts don't have the means to purchase that many more vehicles. They don't have,
of course.
And if you're going to have that many more vehicles, you would need more chargers. So you need more infrastructure, and also, you know, some districts, they have, you know, bus parking lots that are actually, you know, fenced in, most do, and they only have so much real estate to put those vehicles. So, you know, some of those things can be worked around, but it's very hard for me to see when you have an electric vehicle that costs 2 to 3 times as much as a diesel bus. It's very hard for me to see how a district could financially swing to buy two of one of those when they cost 2 to 3 times as much individually.
Okay. That's a great segue right there. I was curious about that. What is the typical cost difference between traditional bus that we're accustomed to seeing diesel powered, versus electric bus? I would assume it depends on the size of the bus, whether it's one of those medium sized buses or I guess a full size bus, but what's that cost range look like?
Well, so the most common school bus on the road today is a 65 or 66 passenger full-size school bus, whether it be an IC, a Bluebird, or a Thomas. Those are the three major brands in the industry. And if you were to buy a diesel or gasoline, they're priced pretty similar to each other. A diesel, gasoline, full-size bus, you're looking at about the state contract pricing through OGS for a base vehicle is in the neighborhood of $140,000, $145,000. And then a district would spec that and option it with cameras and their own features. But if you take that same vehicle and put it with an electric powertrain, you're looking at $400,000. So it's a significant, you know, we're talking on the $250,000 difference between the two vehicles. It's a big difference, and that's not including a charger that you'd have to purchase and install, which could add anywhere from, you know, $10,000 to $100,000. It's all variant on what you're buying and where you're putting it. So there's a lot of extra costs there.
I can already hear it, because I know I'm going to get these emails if I don't ask this question. But Josh, there's going to be cost savings because you're not going to be paying for fuel. Walk me through what the cost difference is on the, I mean, you're charging, which obviously comes with its own costs. What's the quote unquote right. fuel difference cost between electric versus diesel gas powered?
So that is a question it's a nuanced, and so I'm stammering on this because there really isn't very good information right now on what the true cost of electric is as a fuel, right?
Right.
And the reason why that is because you have what's called demand charges, and also whatever rate you are put at by the electric utility based on how much energy you use at your peak period throughout a 12-month calendar year. So, for example, there's a district in the Rochester area that took delivery of their first 5 buses, and it took RG&E better part of 6-8 months to give them an electric bill for the energy that they used every single day for that 6-8 months. It took them that long to figure out what rate to put them at and what to bill them per kilowatt hour. And the reason why that is because it's a totally new rate. Rate case, I think they call it. There's probably a better term for that. Somebody will probably correct me on it. But basically, what we do in heavy duty transportation is not the same as the charger that you have at the public library or in your garage for your Tesla or your Ford Lightning. Like you're on a different rate because your energy usage. To give you an example, these buses have batteries on the low end on a full-size bus that's 210 kilowatts. And for anybody at home, it's a fun exercise to take your electric bill for your house. Most people don't use 210 kilowatts for their home in a month period of time. And the amount of energy you use just to drive this bus for one day is like what it costs to power a house for a month. It's dramatic. So when you start having to figure out how do we charge for this, what is the actual electric cost, that varies. Your electric cost in Fairport on municipal power could be totally different than what it is 5 miles down the road at Gananda Central School, where they're on their own just buying electric from RG&E. So it's the answers to these questions, and I find this, and this is so funny, right? Because I sell these buses. This is my job.
Yeah.
But I also have to be, and I'm lucky I work for a company that allows us to be honest and share what we know today and what we're learning and try to be advisors to our customers on what the right thing to do or what, how to think about this or that. But all of these total costs, these TCO calculators that you'll see out there and you hear talked about, like you've got a $250,000 delta to make up between the cost of that electric bus and a diesel. Now, we're not talking about if you get grant funding or any sort of incentives or rebates. Like, those are great. If you get those, that helps you offset that upfront cost, and it brings your break-even point a lot closer. But what we're seeing so far is that the cost of electric, if you are not on charge management and you aren't, and what that means is you don't have software that's driving when your vehicle charges, at what speed it's charging to avoid those peak rates. If you are just plugging your bus in every time you get back to the depot, which is what most are doing right now because we're not quite there in the industry to have everything fine-tuned to operate, like you're going to pay peak rates. Like you're going to be drawing energy from the grid at 6 o'clock at night when everybody's getting home and turning their microwaves on and the energy is the most expensive. So these TCO calculators and everybody who's trying to say, but you're going to save money, you're going to save money. It's like, I don't believe it, not for a second. Because nobody's run these things long enough to know how much it costs to maintain them. And, you know, what does it start costing once these high voltage components, like these computers that cost, these computers on these vehicles are, thousands of, like, we're talking like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 for some of these computers that are on the vehicle. And when I say computers, I mean, these are modules, drive motors. You get into some of these high voltage components that are, we're not talking about turbochargers anymore on a vehicle. We're talking about a computer module that's sending electric current through the vehicle. That's high tech equipment that's open to the elements. You can't tell me that that thing's not going to have issues 6 years into operation when the customer needs to run it for 10 or 12 years to justify the expense to the district, and they're going to be out of pocket for that component, right? So these are things that, like, I'm it's been a wild day and I've had some of these pretty intense conversations, so I'm sorry if I'm coming off kind of aggressive on this whole thing, but there's so much. This is where it gets to in the day in the life of someone in my position right now, is that there's so many unanswered questions, and we're all trying so hard to support what our customers and our districts and fleets need, but there's so little, like, real good quality information that's not tilted in one direction or the other. It's like, how do you advise on this? And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to talk to you and share this message with the audience, because, like, we're all going through this major transition in our country and our culture of trying to, like, electrify everything, but we have to be balanced and reasoned on how we're approaching this and be realistic on the pace of which we can do it. And, you know, I'll stop talking there for a second, but that's, well,
and I appreciate your tact approaching this and your honesty, because, you know, for anybody listening, you know, you're in bus sales. I mean, in theory, your company stands to benefit significantly with significantly more expensive buses being on the market in another, you know, handful of years and becoming the standard within 10 years. But still, you pointing out the number of obstacles that are, you know, are going to be in the way of a lot of districts, I think is important. And I think a lot of people have questions, like, you know, preparing for this. One of the questions when we threw it out to social to solicit some questions from readers and listeners, one of the most common ones was, well, are the batteries safe? I've heard the batteries aren't safe.
Yeah.
Are the batteries safe? Like, there are a lot of unanswered questions, I think, for a lot of people. And, you know, credit to you, a lot of these questions that you're bringing up and these issues that you're talking about, they weren't even among the top, I'd say, five of the ones that the average person had, and yet they're huge. They're absolutely gigantic. So when somebody asks you about the safety of the batteries, what do you, you know, what's, where are we with that?
Yeah, I mean, safety and in student transportation, I mean, it's the top priority. I mean, that's every regulation we have, everything in the industry, it's all based around safety and transporting our most precious cargo, right?
Yeah.
So of course, you know, you have battery electric vehicles, and you see, and everybody watches the news and they see all the bad things that are happening with electric vehicle. There's nuance to all of those stories, and there's reasons why all of those things happen. I can tell you that there is incredible safety preventative measures taken on these vehicles. Like, if you have any short, you have any wire that's cut or frayed. I learned this the other day when I was with doing a demo with our boss, with our product specialist. He was telling us that every high voltage wire, you have the outside casing, and all the wires are orange. So they're all blatantly obvious that they're high voltage, high danger, don't touch. And all of those wires on the inside of that outer orange coating, there's actually a 12-volt, I don't know what the right terminology is, but there's basically a sleeve that runs around the high-voltage cable that if anything cuts or nicks or interrupts that 12-volt signal, it will decommission all the batteries. It will shut off the entire high-voltage system. So, like, you know, example, like, you have a rock fly up and it hits the wire and, you know, phrase it and opens it up so it's exposed to the environment. It's gonna break that connection, and it will disengage the system so that the vehicle can't have that thermal event that everybody's afraid of happening. So, like, that's one safety protocol. And this is one of the things that we're working on. Like, when we deliver these vehicles, it's not like going down to your Ford dealer and picking up a EV Mustang. Like, when we deliver these vehicles, we're providing training to not only the school and the personnel that works there all the way up and down the chain, but we're also engaging with the local fire departments to inform them and educate them on how you handle these vehicles in case of an emergency, not just a thermal event, but what do you do if this bus is in a rear end accident, or it gets, you know, has somebody have a fender bender? Like, how do you handle approaching this vehicle knowing it's battery powered, not internal combustion? And then the last piece I'll say in this is that the batteries, where you see most of these issues, they're lithium batteries that are, like, take a Tesla, for example, they got cobalt in the batteries and they're a little bit more volatile. Mm-hmm. Whereas the batteries that are in the school buses, I can speak for ours. I believe a couple of the other vendors are the same, but I can speak confidently for ours. Ours are lithium iron phosphate, and they're a little bit more stable of a battery. They don't have that. They could still have an issue. They're not a stable state or solid state battery where you don't have that liquid in there, the inside of the battery that actually provides you the energy. But that iron provides a little bit more stability to the actual chemistry of the battery. And the big reason for that is the stability and safety of it. So that's, you know, there's always going to be that concern, and we will learn more and more about the safety of these. And I think we'd be crazy to say, don't worry about it, it's not an issue, because that's, you have to think about this stuff. But we feel confident that the batteries that are in it are well designed and well protected from the environment and crash and everything else. I mean, these, to keep going on that, the batteries are on all of the products on the market. The batteries are all between the frame rails, and they sit just a little bit below the frame rails, but they're very similar to the way that the diesel fuel tank or gasoline fuel tanks are located today. They're very well protected. They are, I mean, for something to hit a bus to be able to get through to those batteries, I don't even want to know what that would look like. Most situations with a school bus are somebody drives into the back of them and goes under the bumper. Good news is there's nothing back there that could cause an issue there. And same thing up in the front area. There are high voltage components up there, but those are the computer modules and inverters that you don't physically have the batteries exposed to any sort of potential collision there.
Okay, so a couple more questions before I let you go. Grateful for the time, of course. Cost of the maintenance, or what the maintenance schedule looks like for an electric bus versus combustion engine. Is it much different, or is it roughly kind of the same thing? You're dealing with the same kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty similar. And aside from changing oil and fuel filters, you're going to be changing coolant and coolant filters. So that's your oil is now coolant. So you just have a little bit of a change in exactly what you're doing. But, you know, as far as the mechanics out there, they're trying to figure out what their jobs might look like with this. I don't foresee there being much change in demand of the actual work. And for those that don't know, like, school buses, every single school bus in the state of New York has a DOT inspection every 6 months. So there's preventative maintenance. There's 30-day PMs that are done that are going to continue to be done the same way that they always have been, because you still have the same brake components, the same interior lighting, safety features, everything. Like, all the stuff is still the same, just the drivetrain is different. So not a huge change there.
Okay. How long do they take to charge? How long does one of these full-size buses, 65, 66 passenger buses, take to charge? You mentioned that you have to be, in theory, some districts might have to be charging them twice a day. Like, what does that timeline look like?
So it's all variant, of course, on the size of the charger that you have. But the most common, I'll just give the two different cases. You either have a level two charger, which would be a 19.2 kilowatt charger, which is going to be the route that most districts go to get started, because it's the easiest way, the least expensive, and you need the least amount of power on site to do it. That would be like 10 to 12 hours to charge from empty to full. So that'd be like an overnight charge. You plug it in at the end of the day, 5 o'clock, you come in the morning, the bus is charged and ready to go for the next day. That's the easy button. That's the longer charge cycle. If you were to go with a entry level DC fast charger, you'd be looking at like a 30 kilowatt. Use that as an example. That's what we have here at the dealership. We have one of each, the level two and the level three. And we can charge a bus that comes back at 30-something%. We can charge it up in 4 to 5 hours on that. And sometimes even a little bit shorter if it's not that cold out. When it's cold, it takes a vehicle a bit longer to charge because the batteries are need to be conditioned and need to be warmed while that process is happening. So,
Do the batteries perform worse in the winter? Well, that's one question I've seen a couple times on social media now in the last 2 weeks.
Significantly worse. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that the, what we're finding is it's like 20 to 30% loss in range in cold weather. And if you think about it, a school bus is just a giant tin can without much, they don't have like R40 insulation around it. So it's not super efficient as it pertains to heat and retaining it. So there's a lot of energy lost on the heating of the cabin to keep the passengers warm. And there's a lot of energy lost to keep the batteries warm. So the batteries on these vehicles, and this is all electric vehicles, this isn't just a school bus, the batteries are happy at 70 degrees and in that realm. So each vehicle's got a battery thermal management system, which is basically an HVAC system solely focused on keeping that battery pack happy. And it will kick on when the batteries are cold and it will heat the batteries. And if it's super hot out, sitting in your parking lot, it's 90 degrees, the batteries are getting hot, it'll kick on and actually cool the batteries with it. I had a call come in. So that's, you still got me?
Oh, yeah, I got you.
Okay, so that's, yeah, there's a quite a impact on the batteries in the cold weather. So we're looking at like about, you know, we look at it 1.5 kilowatts to drive 1 mile. Like that's like kind of how the industry talks about it. How many kilowatts does it take to drive a mile? Mm-hmm. All the marketing material says 1.5, kind of for a 66 passenger bus. It's kind of understood and believed that 1.5. And we've tested that. We've driven our bus in nice, beautiful October day, 65 degrees, no humidity. It will perform with that. But then you take it out on a day like today, and you're going to be around 2.5 kilowatts a mile, which is it's quite an increase in energy usage.
So just going back to the range that we talked about earlier, that 80 to 100 mile range of what is kind of standard at the moment for an electric bus would be, in theory, reduced by, say, 20 to 30% when it gets colder, like in December through February in upstate New York.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. So I always go by worst case scenario when we talk about range, because if I told you 135 miles, that's what everybody would hear.
Yeah, right.
So on your best case day, perfect conditions, you're bebopping around town, you're going to be able to do, you know, 100, 125 miles probably on a full charge. Variables, of course, but you go into this cold weather, you're looking at 80 to 90 miles before your driver is getting a little bit anxious because their fuel gauge is showing close to E and where's the nearest charger. So yeah, that's when we're doing, like, we're working with districts all over the state, but you know, in my territory, like when we talk about this, we talk about what is your worst day that you have to operate, because if you plan for that, you can do anything. That's how we kind of look at trying to plan and guide districts on this.
And last technical question for you here, lifespan. What's the lifespan of an electric bus versus a combustion engine bus? I mean, they're so new that maybe we don't really have the best data on that yet, but I'm curious, what do we think the lifespan is, or what do you guys see?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, we know being the fact that it's the same physical bus, the actual structure, and in our environment, upstate New York, cold weather, 6-8 months out of the year, you know, it feels like sometimes, but you've got the issue in New York State is corrosion. And what we don't know from our environment on a long, long period of time is how are these things going to hold up to, in particular, sodium chloride that's being spread on all of our roads around this beautiful state. That eats away at just simple metal panels like you wouldn't believe on a vehicle. Everybody knows, everybody drives in this, they understand what this salt does to our vehicles. So industry wide, the warranty, it what tells me something is that the industry says your batteries are warrantied for 8 years. All the manufacturers are at 8 years. So to me, that tells us that that they feel confident that the vehicles and the battery in particular are going to be, have a lifespan of 8 years that they can operate and do the job. Now that's not really talking about battery degradation, which is a whole other conversation. That I think we're going to see most districts are going to want to stay close to their same rotation, which is 8 or 10 years in that realm, 7, 8, 10 years. Some districts in the Finger Lakes region, which I assume is most of your audience, some districts are on a 5-year rotation. It's going to be very difficult for those districts that are on 5-year rotations to purchase an electric bus and only keep it for 5 years because of the sheer cost of the vehicle, as well as the fact that I don't know if people are aware of this, but currently school buses are, districts are repaid through the state, through state aid, over a 5-year period of time on a bus purchase. So if Seneca Falls Central Schools buys a bus and they have, let's just say the bus is $100,000 and they are on an 80% state aid through transportation, over 5 years, they will get repaid $80,000 from the state for that vehicle purchase. With this mandate, along with that, the state changed the repayment period from 5 years to 12. So now a school district is going to have to take repayment of that vehicle now over 12 years, which spreads the spreads those dollars out even longer. So if you're on a shorter rotation, in theory, you could potentially have vehicles that are no longer in your fleet that you're still receiving aid on, which is, it's, that's a whole nother part, I guess, of this conversation, but the complexity, I guess, just to demonstrate this whole thing is very, it's kind of very messy right now. Like districts trying to budget and figure out how this is all going to work out on paper without any funding. If they don't get grant money through the state or through the federal government, like how do they fund this? That's a very difficult answer to figure out right now.
And it sounds like math that would be very challenging for a lot of rural districts across the Finger Lakes and Central New York to make work as enrollment shrink and that state aid number keeps shrinking as well.
That's an interesting point. And not to interrupt you, but one of the things that a lot of, like, I didn't know this until I was in this job working in this business, is that you take some of our school districts like a South Seneca or a Romulus, they have a very low aid ratio because they're along the lakes and there's a very high tax base. The property values are high, but it's, you go to the communities are, they're a rural community. There's not a lot of industry. There's not a lot of work there. And like you said, those enrollments are falling. So it's a very challenging thing for districts to figure out. Like I go to a district in the Rochester area that's at 90% aid. That's a totally different situation than going to Naples where they're at 54. Like it's a totally, like, not even fair, really, if you look at it on paper, like how they're supposed to operate their district in the same way that a district does 30 miles north. So
Yeah, that part of it is a how do we finance schools question more than anything else. Last question here for you. Biggest misconception that you think the whole conversation around electric buses would be better for if it didn't exist, if the misconception was gone?
Well, from which angle, I guess, is the question? Pro EV or anti EV? I guess that's the question.
I would say, well, either give us either one, whatever, from working inside of the industry, I guess I'm just curious, like what misconception do you find like in your day-to-day work, maybe the most annoying?
That's actually a pretty easy one. So there's a big misconception out there that these vehicles weigh dramatically more than a internal combustion engine vehicle. So that is, they do weigh more, but it's not dramatic. So we're talking about 3,000, 4,000 pounds, all depends on spec and everything else. But the GVW, the gross vehicle weight rating that the vehicle can physically withstand when it's loaded with children and cargo, it's still the same vehicle. It still can handle the same weight. So an unladen 66 passenger bus, roughly 19,000 pounds, you put battery power, you're looking at like 23,000 pounds. So it's not a dramatic difference. Most districts, their facilities, their lifts, their bus garages, their parking lots, they're all built to withstand that weight and they can handle it. That's a huge misconception that I get a lot of administrators It's interesting. It must have been something that was brought up at some conference or trade show that everybody heard, and then that was like the one thing they walked away with was, oh my God, our new bus lifts aren't going to work with our new vehicles in 5 years, you know? That's a big misconception. I'll say another one that is, you know, I've been amazed at how well this vehicle performs in the hills. I spent quite a bit of time over the last, well, 2 weeks ago, I had the bus down in Steuben County, down in around Bath and Hammondsport, and drove some of the most wicked seasonal roads that you could find down there with the bus drivers that run those routes every day with a diesel bus. And they were blown away by how well that electric vehicle performed, not just climbing, but also coming down with the regenerative braking. So I think that's a fun part. Like, take all the things that I've just said for the last 35 minutes. The vehicles are awesome and they're really fun to drive. I think the experience for the driver, for the students, everything, like the vehicle experience is great. It's all of the what ifs and the unknowns and the longevity and the financial questions that we all like. I don't think anybody, I can speak for us, like we're not opposed to this as an industry. We're trying to figure this out. We're trying to fly the plane while we're building it. And it's very difficult on the ground to make that happen. But the progress is happening and the vehicles are incredible. And, you know, we'll just get more and more confident with them as time passes on.
I'm glad you're wrapping there, because that has to be from our perspective, covering the whole debate around EVs and electric buses, even, or electric vehicles just at large. It's interesting because from my point of view, it doesn't seem like people are very opposed to the actual thing itself, as in the electric vehicle itself. It's what they're opposed to is the government mandate, the state expectations, yep. The cost, obviously significantly more expensive than a combustion engine. And I think that's an important thing for people to take away from this conversation is, despite all the challenges and the things that districts are going to have to overcome here, you know, the buses are solid. They're good, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing. I, you know, for your listeners, for the, you know, community members that are out there, like, understand that your districts are trying to navigate this too. And when it comes to, we've seen a bunch of challenges across the state with local communities voting, not a bunch, there's been a couple public votes that have gone down to just to use money to offset the difference between grant funds that were received. It's hard to see that, because districts are working hard to try to get these funds, to try to get these vehicles, to learn about them and get firsthand experience, and to have the communities not support it. It's very difficult to see, because the people that are, whether it be the board members or the superintendents, business officials, that are, they're trying to do what they're being mandated to do and take advantage isn't the right word. They're trying to capitalize on the opportunity to receive the funds to get off the ground with this. If you vote that down and don't support and listen to what they're trying to achieve, you know, but we're in a very testy time right now in this country, and the mandate is the problem. I'm a firm believer. I think if the mandate went away, I think that you would see just gradual progression in this way. If the product works and it's good, people will want it, and you will see progression in that direction. And I mean, that's what I'm lobbying for. That's what my hope is that this mandate goes away and we can just let the industry and let the demand of the market drive us in this direction. And then we can be prepared as a dealership network and as a group in the state of all the dealers that support these products to be able to truly be able to provide that great experience that we do today with a diesel, gasoline, or propane vehicle.
Billy, appreciate the time and the expertise. We're definitely going to have you back. We need to have a couple more of these conversations over the next 6 to 12 months for sure.
Yeah. Hey, and I got to add one more thing.
Sure.
So this is something that I've tried to make a point when I'm talking with schools is to reassure that today's diesel school bus, one of the biggest things you see when you read a news article or any publication about, you know, anything that's to do with air quality, climate change, anything of that nature, the diesel bus that that your school district is buying today is not the same diesel school bus that they're trading in. And for every diesel that goes in, the diesel that comes out is dramatically dirtier than what's coming in. And these diesel engines today, that Cummins is the largest engine manufacturer and pretty much the king of the industry, it's amazing. I mean, these things are putting air that's clean. The air coming out of the tailpipe, we joke, is in most cases just as clean, if not cleaner, than the air coming into the engine through the intake. So there's a lot of really good progress being made overall, not just with zero emission, but with internal combustion engines today, that we're in a good place. And every vehicle that gets purchased is replacing an older, dirtier vehicle, and we're making progress towards cleaner air in our communities.
Appreciate you saying that and making that point, because I think it is worth reminding everybody listening that the diesel engine of 2022 or 2023 is not the same one of 1973. So,
or even 2010.
Yeah, absolutely. Billy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for taking it today.
Yeah, take it easy, Josh. Thank you.